All right, welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White. He is a sad Blue Jays fan today after being taken to the highest of highs after watching Vlad and his heroics against the Yankees, mocking the Yankees after with fellow countryman David Ortiz, sort of countryman. I know he's born in Canada, but really Dominican. And then the Mariners come out, man, and we kind of expect their pitching staff's going to be gassed. Not the case, Dylan. They're not gassed at all. They've been taking it to our Jays, man. Sad times, Louisville.
It is sad times. It is sad times. Just another story of not being able to put them away. Like you said, Seattle comes in gassed. They're using their quote-unquote fifth starter. He's on 3 days rest. They missed their charter. It's at home. Jays are well-rested, having their ace go up, and they can't win. And then Yesavage was not the Yesavage we saw in the previous couple starts. But, there were some questionable calls in the first inning that people say might have changed the complexion. But, they
did a really bad first inning. I thought he settled down a little bit after that. I mean, it wasn't clean, but he wasn't really giving up runs. In that first inning, obviously, to come out and – look like you have a chance to maybe get out of the inning unscathed, and then the home run, with a couple of guys on to Julio, and then, a three-run, 3-0 hole right before you even swing a bat. Yeah. So that's a bit of an issue, hopefully they can clean that up. We've had a tight National League series, some legitimate one-run tight ball games. I think this Dodgers-Brewers matchup is very evenly matched. We'll see if they end up going seven or not. But you can just see that these teams are counterpunching, different styles of builds, obviously, but both have a lot of talent throughout the roster. I just think the Dodgers aren't going to overcome them because they just produce a lot more runs. Yeah. They have more ways of scoring on you, even beyond the home run. Not that they can play small ball per se, but they can take some extra bases. They have a bunch of guys that can run. They have guys that, can put the ball in play and don't have to sell out for power. It's not like the Yankees. This is a very different style team. We'll see if they can overcome it. But so far, not so good in these series. They haven't been we'll see. It's only game two in the NLCS. It's 2-1 Dodgers as we're recording this, but you just get the feeling, Dylan, the deeper you go into these games, even with a bad Dodgers pen, that the Dodgers are going to figure out a way to win these games. So we'll see what happens. Maybe I cursed them and we'll get a little Brewers luck. We need a little bit more. But, Dylan, this is crazy, but people are already drafting fantasy baseball leagues. They are. The NFBC, the real hardcores of the hardcores. They're already drafting some DCs. You, as a fellow lunatic, and I guess not a complete degenerate because you're not drafting in any of these leagues as far as I know, but you are keeping a watchful eye and paying attention to the ADP. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today, Dylan. And we're going to focus on infielders. We'll see how far we get. Maybe we get a little further than that, talk a little pitchers, maybe some outfielders. It's not a whole lot of outfielders. If not, then the next episode, we'll definitely spend some time digging into some of the pitchers, which I think are very relevant. And then a handful of outfielders that I think are a lot of dart throws is probably the best way to probably put it for a variety of reasons. Right. Well, that being said, why don't we jump into it a little bit, Dylan? We've already talked about your pain with the Blue Jays. We've talked a little bit about this Dodgers Brewers series. And we insulted all the NFBC players out there. Well, I did. You did not. You are well respected within that community. It is I who throwing jabs and going everybody crazy. But we're going to look at some prospects that are getting drafted, where they've gotten drafted so far, who's still on the board, and talk through that a little bit, Dylan. What do you say? It's dealer's choice, so I'm going to let you start from where you want to start because there's a lot of interesting names in a variety of fashion on this list.
Yeah, so, I mean, every year I talk about how I want to draft DCs as soon as the season ends because, I've been doing Robo Scout all year and I kind of have a finger on the pulse of the prospects and who have been getting called up and who's on the verge of getting called up. And then of course the season ends and I'm burnt out and I don't do it, but I've looking at this ADP, I call it ADP, but it's really a snapshot of like one league that I've been really following closely. Just where the prospects are taken. And it's like, I think that's how like you or I can really maybe have an advantage over, you know, guys who read like our stuff to make their picks, that we kind of have a you know, a better well-rounded view. So
I want to talk about people that are reading other people's stuff.
Well, sure. I was being optimistic. People are reading our stuff. So I find it interesting when I see these prospects being taken where they're taken. I'm like, oh, I would rather have this guy instead of that guy. And I don't know if he's going to get called up or all that. I mean, I'm not always right at all, because I didn't think Mizorowski was going to be effective when people were taking him last year. I thought, you know, he's going to be in the bullpen and maybe he's like August, September-ish. But, you know, I was definitely shown to be wrong there. But other people were taking like Travis Bazzana, and he didn't even play last year. So, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity. We saw what Nick Kurtz did, obviously, when he got called up. We saw Chase Burns was very effective. He was taken in a bunch of leagues. You know, Will Warren pitched for a lot of the season. Ben Rice obviously did well. I don't know if he called him a rookie, but like there's a lot of opportunity to get meaningful and valuable performance from these rookies or these guys who don't have full-time jobs maybe when the season starts. So, you know, thought it'd be interesting to look at them. So, I don't know. Let's start catchers. The first kind of catcher off the board who's a prospect-ish is Basayo, Samuel Basayo. He was kind of taken in the 12th round. Just signed a contract with the Orioles at extension. Rushman, maybe he's not the guy. So it's a question of how much playing time Basayo will get, but I think he's best going to play. Just for context, he was taken after Francisco Alvarez and before Alejandro Kirk and Ivan Herrera, though Ivan Herrera is UT only right now. But just to give you a context of where Basayo's taken, I do like him. I think he's going to be a good hitter and a good hitter for power. You are kind of taking the top end here at the 12th round, I think, of his outcomes. Like, he's got to be the Basayo we're pretty sure he's going to be, but he's got to be right out of the gate. But I don't mind that pick. What do you think of that? Basayo being the first rookie catcher and in the 12th.
Oh, man. It feels really early, and especially in a DC, even if it's a two catcher league, I'm not hitching my wagon to that. I mean, I get it. Like, this may look really bad in a year. The power's crazy. The angles are really good. He's got enough plate skills, just has limited major league experience. We'll see how he fits in on a day-to-day basis at this point. I do think he'll probably be up. I don't know. Like, I don't know how much I like that more than like, and this is going to sound bad, like an Alvarez who's taken his lumps over a few years and kind of knows what he needs to adjust to. We'll see if he does or not. Yeah. Like, he went after Alvarez. So like, I can kind of see like that making sense. I honestly think I'd rather have like Kirk. If Kirk goes five rounds later, and I can draft like better pitchers or positional guys, I think I'm doing that. I don't know. Like, maybe there's a 30 home run season there as a 21-year-old in the big leagues. I tend to think that's probably 3 years down the road.
Yeah.
It's the way that these guys typically track. Like, I don't look at him as that kind of prospect that he's going to walk in, waltz in day one and just dominate. And if he does, it's going to be for like a month or two, and then it's going to slide pretty hard. And then you hope that he adjusts back again. But yeah, I mean, the power is going to be good. I just don't want to invest in a young catcher without a track record that early in a draft. I'm also very catcher adverse, so I may be different from others. What do you say?
He was the 12th catcher off the board. So he's still your catcher one in a 15 team league. So like I said, Herrera was after, but he's UT only. So that is Kirk, his 13th. Real Muto was 14th. Kyle Teal was 15th. So I do like him better than Real Muto and Teal. I mean, I'm always a Alejandro Kirk guy. I like the batting average, and I like the Toronto. And he plays full-time, et cetera, et cetera. Good framer, so he's going to play full-time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and he's cheap. No one wants him.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't mind. I think that's a good, it's a fine spot. It's defensible. Take Bisaccia there. I just don't know if I would do it. And I'm pretty sure I wouldn't. I wouldn't do it. I think I'd rather have Francisco Alvarez for sure. And they're pretty much beside each other there.
It feels risky.
Yeah. Yeah. So then after Bisaccia, the next prospect catcher was Carter Jensen, RoboScout darling Carter Jensen, in the 18th. The catcher before him was Logan Ohapi, and after was Austin Wells. You know, I don't mind that.
I don't hate it, but I think I'd rather have Wells.
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, well, the problem with Wells is his batting average isn't great, and Ben Rice was stealing some at-bats from him-ish. Who knows what the Yankee lineup's going to look like next year? Bellinger has decided to opt out. Grisham's a free agent. Is Goldschmidt going to be back? I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I do like Austin Wells. I do like him as a dynasty asset and redraft. He could definitely have a breakout season. But I kind of like the upside of Jensen. They were really playing him at the end of the year. He was leading off a lot of the time. He was hitting for power. He was hitting for average, from what I remember.
He's really good. I mean, like, yeah. The skill-wise, it tracks. I just always worry about, maybe it's too much so, that there's going to be enough playing time if there's struggles. Even if a guy is really good early, like we've seen so many guys tick back in year two and then maybe find it again in year three, you know? So it's always kind of a question for me is like, do they get exposed at some point or maybe not?
Yeah. I mean, with a catcher, sometimes there's, you know, debate about whether you actually might want the zero instead of a guy going for like 400 at bats and hitting 200. Maybe you'd rather have the zero and have him only playing every so often. Like I when I was looking at the ADPs and running my spreadsheet using kind of like Steamer 600 projections, kind of manually guessing playing time. The Steamer 600 is as close as we can get right now before they update. Into the new season, and like Cal Raleigh, who is still projected to, you know, be 30 home run hitter and all that, it's like a fourth or fifth round value just because his batting average is so low. He gets the plate appearances, so his bad batting average does drag your overall batting average down. So I was very interested to see that because, you know, he's 60 home run catcher that you'd think in a 30 catcher league, he's going to be, you know, first or second round. And he was popping out at fourth and fifth, which is pretty interesting. So yeah, my point is, so if Carter Jensen struggles, you know, maybe it's not that horrible if he's your catcher two. And I think he was being taken as a catcher two. So it's not that bad. And maybe you can pick up a handcuff as your third catcher, someone who may come in and play.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a bad play. I'm way more interested in taking the catcher in like round 18.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like if you decide to take some flyers on catchers, like over the last six rounds of a DC, you probably, if you take four last six picks, right, you're going to end up with catchers that are usable. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of those picks at the end of the draft are like bad flyers for relievers. Prospects who aren't getting called up this year, you know, guys with like major question marks, whether they're even usable. Like once you get from round 45 on, like I don't have a problem taking a bunch of catchers and having depth, you know, just so you can always fill that position too. Cause having two of those is a lot harder than having to fill a first base, a third base, a corner, you know what I mean? Like all that stuff is a little easier and you have more guys that are multi-positional that can fit those positions as well. The Bisaccia one in the 12th round, I understand the mentality. I understand the upside. I just think it has it's like such a five dog parlay. Like, it's like, you're trying to hit five legs for that thing to work out. And I just don't know, like it happens, but it's not common. So cool. Let's take a quick break here. We've talked about the couple of catchers that you're going to talk about. We come back, we got more infielders to chat. We got a few more positions, and I think maybe some more relevant names even, just because we're not catchers. We'll be right back. All right, and we are back. We're talking NFBC ADPs for 2026 in draft champions leagues. Yeah, they're already drafting. As I mentioned at the top of the show, these guys are hardcore. Talked about a few catchers. We talked about Samuel Bisaccia. We talked about Carter Jensen. There's some lower round guys here, Joe Mack, Jefferson Cuero. You had some other guys that weren't taken. Cuero's had so many injuries, man, I don't know what to do at this point. Joe Mack to me is interesting because Joe Mack is an outstanding defensive catcher. It's probably a 60, maybe better. We get that. He had a pretty good year at the plate in AAA, which is a good hitting environment, no doubt. But age appropriate. There's underlying skills there. They're not outrageous, but the power is pretty good. The angles are pretty good. If I remember, the swing decisions are pretty good. And it's a little blue on the contact, little below average on the contact, if I recall. I'll double check that when you talk. This is one of those flyers I'm talking about. Mack in the 35th round is like your third catcher, maybe even a second if you're feeling really saucy and you went heavy on some relievers or something. I don't hate this. There is a chance that Joe Mack gets 350 plate appearances with the Marlins and maybe pops 12 or 13, which from a catching position, like, pretty valuable. I don't dislike this at all. I think this is good value. Cuero, I have no idea if he's going to ever play. Like, he's had so many injuries over the last couple of years, and the types of injuries he's had, shoulder, et cetera, that worries me. Mack, though, I'm buying in on Mack. I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, I like it because, I mean, we saw Agustin Ramirez basically in the same position, obviously different profile than Mack, but he got 585 plate appearances hitting in the middle of the order. So, I mean, the Marlins catchers right now are Agustin and then Liam Hicks, who also played first base. So, like, there's definitely a spot ready for Joe Mack. Like you said, he can get 350 plus. He's a good defender. And he has 20 to 25 home run pop, at least according to RoboScout. So I do like that pick for sure.
Yeah, I also like that one. A couple other names you mentioned, Harry Ford, Jimmy Crooks, Cooper Engel. I don't know if Engel's going to be an everyday catcher for them, especially with Bo Naylor there. He might be a bat with catcher eligibility. I don't really know, though. He's a tough fit. Crooks, fine. I don't know how much Crooks hits. I think he can catch. I think he's going to get at bats. Like, he's a late round flyer that, like, you throw up there and, like, maybe it hits. I did that and I got William Contreras one year, the first year they went to the Brewers, like, and he was really good. And then Harry Ford, kind of another one where I could see it working out, especially a catcher. It's not OBP, these are average leagues, so he takes a little hit there, but it would be interesting as maybe like a 48th, 49th, 50th round. Like, I'm kind of cool with Harry Ford in that range. He's still on the board in the 41st, so I guess that's a possibility.
I think people are scared of, like, he's behind Cal Raleigh, so how much playing time is he going to get?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. He could play some other positions. They haven't done that yet. So I get worried with some of these catchers that they could be Dalton rushing, you know? They could be Dalton rushing if they're behind a good starter and they're up all season, but they see like 130 at bats in 4 months. You know, it's like absurd shit. So, all right, let's jump on to the next one. Let's talk a little bit. First baseman. Sal Stewart in the 18th round. After Tristan Casas, before Luis Arias. Dude, I love this pick. I'm going to be honest, and I'm not even a Sal Stewart guy. 18th round. If he outproduced Casas next year, it wouldn't shock me. And I would guess that does he have some second base eligibility too?
No, it's just first base right now.
Really?
But he may get it.
What did he play more? He played more second base in the minors this year, didn't he?
I think he did, but in the majors, which is what NFBC is doing for their positions, he played 11 at first and 6 at third base. So, I mean, there's a chance he'll get third base in the middle of the season.
Yeah, so it was third. He didn't play any second base. He actually played 13 games at second. He played more in 17. He played more games at third base than anything else. I just remember when they had moved him over to second base, that was a potential, because he's actually played more second and third than he has first. So is he
must, first, yeah.
But he only has first base eligibility because that's where he played a majority of his major league games. Interesting. Okay. So not enough games at third base. Only four. So how many games does he need to be eligible at either second or third base in season? Is it 20 or is it a little less?
It's 10. It's 10 in 10. Season. Yeah.
Okay.
So he could easily qualify at a bunch of positions,
which I think adds some value.
Yep.
But performed pretty well. I mean, obviously the walk rate was low, strikeout rate jumped quite a bit. I think that's going to settle though. Like I think that his strikeout rate will actually be closer to what his minor league strikeout rates were, which are like 15-16%. I bet it's like 18-19% next season. That adjustment's going to happen. He expands the zone a little bit, but he's always expanded. He's really good. In terms of like out of zone contact, he's got insane out of zone contact like rates in terms of how high they are. Good in zone. I think that probably as he gets more experience against major league pitching, I think those numbers are going to drop a little bit. But like his swinging strike rate is right in line with what it was in AAA, especially after he started hitting for more power. And he's not taking a lot of stuff down the middle of the plate. Like he's going to do some damage, and he's made those adjustments in the swing where his launch angles are way higher now. Like we have the access to what the launch angles were years ago, right? He wasn't catching barrels at a 17% rate in the minor leagues consistently, like up until this year, right? Like it was like skill stuff, really good. There's underlying power there. The angles aren't great. And he was kind of an all fields guy. He's adjusted that we saw legitimately. I mean, it's 40 batted ball events, so it hasn't fully stabilized yet, but it's close. Like his EVs were really good. The angles were really good. The barrel rate was really good. His hard hit rate was really good. I'm going to buy into this. And he's in Cincinnati, right? The opportunity is there. He is a guy that could explode next year. No?
I completely agree. I kind of liken him to Vinny Pasquantino, just like good underlying hit and good underlying power. He was hitting in the middle of the lineup of a playoff team for the Reds, like hitting fourth, fifth, or sixth near the end of the season. Like his expected batting average is .296, again, in small sample size. But, you know, he hit .255, but his expected batting average is .296 based on those launch angles you're talking about and the EVs and the barrel rates and all that. So I do like it a lot. I have him as like a 15th round value, just taking Steamer 600, and I think when they update the projections, he'll be even better because they will consider some playoffs and they'll give him the age curve bump because he's 23 right now, and so he'll, you know, that's the projection they give him at the end of the season. For the new season, they'll give him a new one. So it's I like Sal Stewart a lot for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good name. Next, we'll move on to here. Bryce Eldridge in the 21st. This was after Arias. It was before Ryan O'Hearn. I really like Eldridge. I think the thing that he doesn't have in his favor in comparison to Stewart is the ballpark, man. It is a tough place to...
Getting the right people in the door quick is critical to maintain your company's workflow. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed Sponsored Jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast because it puts the best and most qualified candidates in front of you quickly. Plus, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's a tough place to hit for power. Luckily for Bryce Eldridge and for the Giants, it's kind of like putting Devers there where his power is so outrageously plus, like double plus. It's 70 grade raw. And when he does drive the ball, he really drives it. Probably less of an issue. I do think for like a hard hitting fly ball hitter like this, though, it's not the best place to be just in terms of batting average, counting stats, some of that sort of stuff. Could be really good. I don't know if he returns this value. Even as a platoon player, I feel like Ryan Ahern, who also still has outfield eligibility, is more valuable. But that might be a me thing. I know he has San Diego.
I think you're completely right. I think Eldridge, I love him in Dynasty. Don't like him so much in redraft in 2026. Yeah,
it's 1 year value, by the way, just to remind everyone. This is just for 2026. We do not care what they do after that, at least for their purpose.
So they have Devers, who played first base, is first base eligible in NFBC. So Eldridge is going to be DHing or playing first base on those days. Devers is DHing. Platoon bat, like you said, probably he's really young, so they're not going to really push him that hard. I think him in the 21st in this draft compared to Sal Stewart in the 18th, I'd take Sal Stewart 99 times out of 100, probably 100 times out of 100, to be honest.
There's better value, right?
Yeah. Higher floor, more playing time. Eldridge has maybe a higher ceiling. I don't know if it's going to be this year. I don't know how many simulations it would take before his season's better than Stewart's this year. I just don't see it as value.
He's a more talented, tooled up player, right? I think that's probably the best way to put it. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily matter in fantasy. All that stuff goes out the window because we're looking for production and lineup, which obviously isn't bad for Eldridge, actually, and could get even better. They seem like they're willing to spend some money and make some big moves and acquisitions. The park context, I think, really hurts him. Because if we're talking about both these guys, and we know they both have the same opportunity, right, in Cincinnati, we would take Eldridge. Like, all things kind of being equal, we would take Eldridge. But I think the opportunity for playing time and also the park context really do just are so slanted in Stewart's favor, which is why he goes earlier in the draft. All right, let's move on to the next one in the first base rank. Another guy that's eligible first base and outfield. CJ Cephas, I have him rostered in a whole bunch of dynasty leagues. And I'm always kind of fringy, kind of looking at my rosters going into next year as, you know, as one does, you take a look at your bad teams that didn't win any money this year. And you're like, what the hell is wrong with them? I kind of wonder if Cephas is a starter for me or not. So how do you view Cephas going into next year? Because I could see him getting enough playing time, but this is the Guardians and they do like their platoons.
Yeah, so he's outfield eligible, only played 17 games at first base, but I have a feeling he's going to get first base, so I kind of have him in this thing. So he's not literally first base eligible right now, but I'm pretty sure he will. His last three games he played for the Guardians was at first base. So you're going to have to wait, you know, a month or so before he gets first base, assuming he's playing. I like it. I mean, Manzardo got hot at the end of the season, and so Cephas might be battling with him, but, you know, Manzardo's not the best defensively, so I could see Cephas, you know, playing more at the position. Cephas did play a lot in the outfield. The Guardians did say they're going to be looking for outfield help for next year. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one for me. I see the skills. It's the playing time for me. If he gets the playing time, I think he'll have a good average, reasonable power. You know, in the 26th round, you're in the bench rounds. It's like 23 is your starting, and so you have 27 bench. So it's a bench shot. You're taking a shot if he's going to get playing time. If Manzardo is injured, for example, and then Cephas takes over, that's a time you plug Cephas in and it's good. So I can see those scenarios where he's valuable. I don't know. He was taken after Kobe Mayo. He was taken before Ryan Mountcastle. I'd rather have those two guys, both of them, before taking Kafis. I just feel Mayo has a better chance of playing time, better ceiling. Mountcastle will probably find a role somewhere, and he always hits whenever he does. And I can see him getting more plate appearances than Kafis as well. So I'm not a big fan of this pick, but I understand why you'd do it.
Yeah, maybe a Guardians fan as well. Yeah. Speaking of Guardians fans, let's move on to second base so we can clear through a few positions here.
Yeah.
Couple of guys split by quite a few rounds. The first one is Luke Kuechel in the eighth round. He's technically not a prospect any longer, but kind of just over his eligibility and relevant to Dynasty and a player that I think we both want to talk about. You know, I don't hate this because I'm going to have to dig into second base in the next couple of days. And I have a feeling that it's as light as it typically is. And it's also a position where there's not a lot of prospects who are going to be good second basemen who are second base eligible as prospects in your minors. So you're always kind of taking a chance that maybe some shortstop turns into a second baseman, but there's very few prospects where you're rostering them as second baseman and they're actually good players. Like, you know, it's kind of like death wish on like Tamar Johnson's prospect status. We should have known that he was going to struggle because he was a second base only guy, like, right? Like, so Kuechel's played a few positions, but he's second base only, maybe one of the rare second base prospects that was really pretty good as a prospect. He's had a lot of injuries, as any Twins player does, but the upside's been tremendous. When he's been on the field, this looks like the kind of pick in the eighth round that could be a third or fourth rounder next year with a full healthy year of playing time, probably going to hit at the top of the lineup. And now the Twins are going to kind of rebuild, I think, maybe on the fly a little bit because they do have a younger team. He's going to get a ton of opportunities. I don't know about the RBI numbers, et cetera. He's got some power. He's got some speed. He's got the hit tool. I like this pick in the eighth round. I can see that it has some upside. I do think it has some risk, though, just based on his injury history.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is worth that based on his projection. He, like you said, he's good hit tool. The power is not bad, but he just really ran, too, when he was in the majors. He had 14 stolen bases in 200 plate appearances, which, you know, 600 plate appearances works out to like 45 stolen bases. So if you're getting a guy who hits, he hit 300. His projection's like 270. So if a guy who hits 270 with 15 home runs, 30 stolen bases, like that's definitely valuable. He hit like third, fourth, or fifth for them. Like he said, they're rebuilding. They're going to give him a good shot. He had 1.6 WAR in those 200 plate appearances. So that's like a five WAR player, four to five WAR player, if you extrapolate out. So he definitely made his mark. He endeared himself to the Twins, the fans, and the team. So I could see him getting the run. So do I think he's worth this pick? I do think he's worth this pick. But there is a lot of downside, like you said. The injury history,
yeah,
no track record. So it's tough. Like, he was taken after Bryce Terang, before Brandon Lau. I mean, I think I'd rather have Terang, but I'd have him ahead of Lau. I think Lau is just kind of power and platoon. And Kuechel's
Yeah, I feel like that's right. Like, I would rather have Terang with the power adds that gains that he's made this year. Yeah. And I just don't love Brandon Lau at this point. Like, if he's a throwaway, like, middle infield guy in a deeper league, it's like, yeah, I can see, like, there's some value there. But, yeah, he should go ahead of him. I think that totally tracks. All right, the other second baseman that we have here is Travis Pezzana. He went after Nick Gonzalez, but before Jonathan India. I'd take him before Nick Gonzalez. How saucy is that? I think it's going to be a good pick. I think he's going to be up quickly. I think there's even a chance he breaks camp with the team. You've looked at the underlying numbers. I've looked at the underlying numbers. They're pretty good. Even before the injury, they were pretty good. Took him a while to get going again afterward with the power and stuff, but it started to come back. This guy can just hit, and he's going to do the work. He was the number one overall pick. They spent a ton of money on him. I think he's in the lineup. I think day one. I think they're going to break camp with him. If he's healthy, I think they're in Campbell. He was already in AAA, spent some time there. And honestly, if he had been healthy all year, I don't think there's a non-zero chance that he already graduated based on how these guys move.
Yeah, I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves here, but him and Weatherholt were kind of, they were all kind of linked since the draft together. And in this draft, we're going to get to it. Weatherholt was taken in the 18th and Bazan is taken in the 29th. And I don't think they're 11 rounds apart in value. Yes, maybe Weatherholt had the better season. Maybe he's more likely to break camp with the Cardinals and Bazan is with the Guardians, but I think they're a lot closer than 11 rounds suggests. So I think Bazan was taken a bit too late here. I agree with you.
Well, here, let's move on to the shortstops then, because Weatherholt's the first one. I think Bazan was late. I think Weatherholt was too late. In fact, I think Weatherholt should be going within the top 10 rounds. I think he will, by the late drafts that happen for like the main event stuff in Vegas, I bet he goes inside the top 10 rounds. I'll put that bet with anybody right now. As long as he's not injured, right? Injured, don't put it out there. He's going to be their starting third baseman. They're going to trade somebody, whether it's Arenado or it'll be the starting second baseman. They'll trade Donovan. I think I'll put it this way. I think it's a very slight chance. I don't think there's a non-zero chance that in 2027, he's their starting shortstop and Mason wins with another team. Because the Cardinals are absolutely going to try to rebuild this year. There's going to be a little bit of a tear down here. I think there's going to be some trades. He almost was up this year. I think it just didn't make sense to kind of tack on that service time. I think he's breaking camp. I think he's a guy that the Cardinals are going to be very cognizant, particularly Chaim Bloom is going to be very cognizant of the additional draft money he's going to get for the PPI incentive. This is a guy who is geared, locked and loaded and ready to be one of the front runners of the National League for the Rookie of the Year award next year. I really, truly believe that. I think this is going to be a top five or six prospect. And I'll put it this way. Of my systems, I cover the Cardinals. I cover the Astros. I cover the Blue Jays. And I cover the Cubs for the handbook. This is hands down the best prospect in any of my systems. Maybe by a full grade. It's almost like a 70. This is a future all-star. I honestly think that, like, draft this guy. Draft him in NFBC this year. I think this 18th round pick is going to look genius. He went after Chase Mydroth. Are we serious? And that's not even dissing Chase Mydroth. That's just saying, like, Weatherholt is a dude. This is the dude of dudes, like, this year, I think. The other guys we're going to talk about with the next two picks, and I think...
But I think that's part of that's part of it.
But these are the top three prospects in baseball. Arguably, like, fantasy prospects, I probably would have it Griffin, McGonagall, Weatherholt right now.
But I could see what happens is you get to the 17th round and Weatherholt, McGonagall, and Connor Griffin are still out there. And you're like, oh, I want to get one of these guys, but I don't want to wait too long. But I don't know. I want to get the right one. I don't want to pick the wrong one. So you're kind of okay with someone picking one of them. And then you get like whoever's left. And so they just keep getting pushed down and pushed down and pushed down. And in this case, Weatherholt was taken first. And then it was McGonagall and Griffin in the 20th back to back, basically. You know, I think I like McGonagall over Griffin depends on the build. I mean, I assume McGonagall's going to have the better hit tool. He's going to hit, you know, say 280 to 300 even. He won't steal that many bases, but, you know, he could have 20 home runs. So I like guys who have good average and like 20 home run power. Griffin is going to have way more stolen bases, high ceiling. He could be Bobby Witt. He could be Bobby Witt this year.
It's a better hit tool than Bobby Witt at this age. It's not even close.
But is it a better hit tool than McGonagall?
I sat there for 3 days in that series, and I watched the two of them. And I've seen McGonagall multiple times. I've seen Griffin multiple times. Griffin had twice as many hits in that series as he had whiffs. Whiffs. He does not swing and miss. And it's like not selling out for power. I don't know, man. McGonagall's been swinging and missing more than I expected. He's been not as good in AFL as I had expected. Mm-hmm. He kind of dragged a little bit down the stretch. I think like under the hood, he's got everything going, right? The angles are great, all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. Griffin's a Ferrari. Griffin's a first round fantasy pick. Like, yes. I just wax poetic about Weatherholt. I think he's going to maybe be the most valuable this year. There is a non-zero chance the Pirates put an extension on the table, get Griffin signed before the season, like Churio, and he is their starting everyday shortstop day one. I think it's totally plausible. There is a chance they screw around because they're the Pirates. Mm-hmm. I would really be shocked if he's not up by May 1st. I honestly would be kind of shocked if all three of these guys don't break camp with their respective clubs, because I think they're the best option. I think Connor Griffin's the best player on the Pirates right now, position player. It's going to be him and Paul Skeens. It's going to be like Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout on the Angels. It's going to be like these two all-world players. Yeah, you know, I don't know, because none of them really play in very good hitting parks either, right? Like between St. Louis, Detroit, and Pittsburgh, I say the best hitting park is Detroit and then Pittsburgh. And then like St. Louis is a pretty bad park to hit it, frankly. But the thing with Weatherholt is Weatherholt has like the best balance of everything going on right now with maybe at least enough talent around him for like the counting stats to be good. And he can run. He's an above average runner. They will run him. Griffin, I think, could be Tatis. Griffin could be a superstar. It's just a matter of if they play him and they don't do anything to screw him up, which I don't think they can. His dad's a baseball coach, like, you know, baseball's his life. I think that's the only thing he does. He also just got engaged this past weekend. Congratulations to Connor on that one. Dude, I want all these guys, but I have a tendency to do this where like I get into these DCs and I'm like, I want all of these rookies.
So
they're all gonna work out, but like I do think all of these guys are pretty good picks. I think Weatherholt is gonna be the one that goes into camp, very obviously has a job, and people are like 9th, 10th round. Like, you know. I think that he jumps quite a bit. It could happen with Griffin and McGonagall. It wouldn't shock me if the Tigers give McGonagall a month or so in AAA. There's just something there. As good as he is, there's something there with their history that they haven't like skyrocketed their guys right up. They've always taken a little longer with guys you think are ready. So we'll see what they do. I'm interested to see. I think him and Max Clark could both be up next season. I wonder if they try to keep them together, start the season in AAA, in Toledo. They spend a month there and then they come up. And they're just less concerned with the PPI picks. You know, sometimes teams do that. The Red Sox did that this year with Roman Anthony. Anthony could have been up from day one. I don't think there's any question about that. It's just whether they do it or not. So I don't know.
So one wrinkle I want to say is that these guys are all shortstop only right now, but like you were saying, Weatherholt may be third base, McGonagall may be second base, Connor Griffin may get outfield. So like the fact they may get dual eligibility in season will maybe add some value to them. Would you rather have the guy who's shortstop third base who could have corner then, or do you want shortstop outfield like Griffin might have? And then
shortstop outfield, because that means I can fill middle infield, shortstop, and then what, 5 outfield spots plus 2 utility. So it just covers more. It's just more flexibility.
Yeah.
Right. And he also factors into like whatever my 9 or 10 outfielders that I try to have in these DCs. And those guys that are multi-positional that you can count within that 10 free up spots for pitchers. I've done well in these leagues. This is the one NFBC format where I've done okay. I haven't won a league, but I've come in like second and third a few times and won some money. I was terrible this year and just like abandoned the team, but that's another conversation. I had so many injured guys, I was like, I don't even need to change the roster any longer because everyone's on the IO anyway. I can't not start a guy on the IO, you know.
So but, we have, go ahead.
Anyway, no, continue.
I was just going to say, so the next guy's kind of, we're spending a lot of time on the, I mean, it's a good discussion, but next guys are like Carson Williams in the 25th, Jet Williams right after him in the 26th, Aiden Miller in the 31st. So you're getting past the 30th round there. Sebastian Walcott, the Rangers in the 34th, Colt Emerson, Kalen Culpepper in 37 and 38, Leo DeVries still on the board. So which of those guys jumps out to you as value, or, you know, you don't like that pick?
Funny, I'm going to say this, Aiden Miller. I think there's a legitimate chance there are some moves made this year, whether it's him traded or Bohm or Stott. Somebody moves out of that infield and then Miller jumps in. It might take until late May, early June. May not be immediate. The feedback we've gotten on him and then just watching video, underlying stuff, it's really good. And he's an outstanding defender at shortstop. He might even move Trey Turner to second base. I kind of wonder if that's the case. But figuring that he is good in the left side of the infield, the arm is pretty good. Maybe they move him to third and he's like, you know, and then Bohm can be moved off somewhere or they make another deal. Or maybe Bohm slides to DH if they can't re-side Schwarber. I think he's in the plans. I think he's an option. He's been a no-go guy, I think, in a lot of trades. When the Phillies, obviously, are always active on the trade market, I believe he's been like, nope, don't even ask, kind of player. So I think it's interesting. Teams did a lot of work on him. Every scout I talked to really liked him. I was not a fan coming out of high school. It took me a long time to buy in. I'm kind of bought in after this season. The feedback we got consistently is really good. The infield defense, the shortstop defense, going to keep him in the lineup. And he can hit, and there's some power, and there's some angles. Not everything is perfect. There's swing can be a little hitchy at times, and I worry about that a little bit, but I think it's going to click. And there's a lot of teams that have all-star on this guy. They have 60s on him. So take that for what it's worth. I think that's the best value. I don't know if Walcott hits enough this year to be in the majors. He probably needs a year to kind of catch up to the level a little bit because he's been so far above the level at every age, so young. Emerson needs to stay healthy, have a full good year. Culpepper, I could see being a late round flyer for me. I could see that potentially working out. That was in the 38th round. I don't hate that. He hit pretty well in double A this year. It's the Twins. Like I said, they're rebuilding. They could find a spot for him, but they got a lot of like infielders. It's kind of like, where does this all fit? So, plays a decent shortstop, so he's going to be able to play all over the infield. I think that makes a lot of sense. All right, we've gone 45-plus minutes on this, Dylan. I don't think we need to talk about the third baseman. We got Murakami. We can have a whole bunch of conversations about him once he signs. I'm really not into it. Even some of the guys that he's going – yeah, no, not a fan. Marcelo Meyer, Kyle Karros. Akimoto, who I do not know a whole lot about. So I think we covered most of the big important names in this because these third basemen are a little less inspiring. Interesting stuff. I always think these ADPs are really, really interesting. It's not something that I'm partaking in myself until March. But I understand why people do it. You know, you get some decent values, etc. When you're doing these kind of leagues, and especially when depth is the name of the game, sometimes you can get some steals. Plus, you know, we like drafting is fun, right, Dylan?
So, it is.
Shout out to all the NFBC guys doing their thing. For Dylan, for Jeff, this has been another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.
Cheers.